Hey, everybody. Thanks for being here. Hey, Shauna, little Red Riding Hood in the wind. Don, that recording you were just playing from Rupert Spira was perfect, brilliant. God's face in all experience. Don told us a while ago that was the name of it. This is exactly what I was trying to talk about on Sunday. This is exactly, I think, what Eshwar Ziegelbin talked about in our satsang, our guest satsang we had with him last Sunday night. And it was interesting to hear Rupert say that this sense that consciousness is somehow in the body persists through many years of non-dual study or seeking or something, you know, because it just feels that way. So that's the real challenge, and that's what we're doing with our attempted awareness, watching awareness, and that's why it's important. We talked about this last night in Gentle Healing Year One. That's why it's important to take that awareness, watching awareness practice off of the meditation cushion. Because if we don't, then when we sit down on the meditation cushion, we still think that there's an individual in a body trying to reach something else. But it was, So if you haven't heard that, video, again, it's Rupert Spira, God's Face in All Experience. Wonderful. Okay. So, you know, I assume we'll get to some more of that. I think, I'm going to read you my journaling today, but, first let's have a song. So let me, just lost you guys, but I'll find you back here in just a second. Okay, here we go. Thank you. Yeah, Shauna says she loves the song by Crosby, Stills and Nash. And I think I cut off the first minute of that video because Joni Mitchell was talking. But I think what I heard her say was that she wrote it. But we may want to double check those facts if if we want to really win a trivia contest, I guess. But she did it beautifully. And I think, you know, the thing with the version we know is we don't necessarily hear those words. And those words are like, you know, we're stardust, we're golden, we're a billion-year-old carbon. And we've got to get ourselves back to the garden. You may be wondering, what the heck has that got to do with anything? Well, I think it does. I think that's exactly what Rupert Spire has been talking about. I think that's exactly what we are contemplating is, you know, what's the true nature of our being? You know, are we these bodies? And that's the fundamental, you know, that assumption is what kind of keeps us off the path, even when we think we're on the path. That's the fulcrum to that whole thing, you know, that one piece that keeps it all in place, the illusion, the belief, you know, the, oh, why can't I wake up? That's the one, that's the piece. Shauna, why are you outside? You're going to have to like unmute and tell us why you are outside in your blanket. Come on, share.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never done this on the phone before. Because I'm being very lazy and I hired house cleaners. So I'm sitting outside on the floor so they can clean our house.
Well, bless your heart. I can tell you, Cheryl's on there. So if you want to not stand out in the wind, I see she's signed in up there in that nice warm kitchen right there behind you. So I just thought. Hi, Cheryl. Look at poor Shauna. We'll assume she's doing what she wants to do. as you guys know, and I said it last night, again, I said it like this, I've told everybody and anybody that'll listen, you know, I had myself a week of a existential crisis, but I think Cheryl's waving at you through the window, Shauna, Come on up, she says. This crisis, I think, is exactly where I need to be. Cheryl's making banana bread. Squirrel. But I think this crisis is right where I need to be. And frankly, I mean, you know, everybody has their own process. But, you know, I want to bring all y'all in too, right? I want you right here. Because I really do think this is the where the rubber meets the road. And I'm just shocked as I go back and I listen to different teachings. And I'm quite sure I heard that Rupert Spire teaching before, but I don't think I could hear what he was saying. Because it was filtered through this belief that that I'm a person, that I'm listening, you know. And, you know, gosh, hadn't the Course in Miracles been telling us that for, well, you know, I've been reading it for
40 years.
maybe not quite that long, but, yeah, something like that. You know, I'm not a body, I'm free, I'm still as God created me, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, it's kind of like a nursery rhyme, right? But there's real significance there. And so the question for me becomes, you know, it's what I talked about on Sunday a little bit. If I am not what I have always assumed myself to be, what am I? And it's from that point that the self-inquiry makes sense. It's from that point that this self-inquiry is productive. Like a cough, right? A productive cough. I got to spit that out, right? I mean, really, that block out in order to begin to ask the question. Because if the small self, if the person, if the human being, if Jacqueline says, "Who am I?" Boy, there's lots of answers. Most of them aren't good. Who are you? Who do you think you are? I mean, basically, it's the same question if you're asking ego. We talked a little bit last night in General Healing about sitting in the wobble, sitting in the uncertainty. I want to say it's not even uncertainty. Sitting in the willingness to remove the foundations. Yeah, that's what the wobble was. Because when we, and what brought about this idea for me of a wobble is Eshwar asked me on a phone call the day before our satsang, the same thing that he asked George in the satsang, which was, tell me who you are without using any concepts. It's like, I mean, if you sit with that for a minute, right? It's like, that's a wobbly place to be. I'm like, I can't do that. Well, I know I'm not supposed to use concepts when looking at who I really am. But really, just sitting in, who am I if I'm not who I have conceptualized myself to be? And I don't mean, wife, mother, vice president of Awakening Together, retired judge, woman. I don't mean any of those, which is what I have taken that to mean in the past, these definitions. Oh, I got to let go of the idea that I'm a wife, that I'm a mother, that I'm a whatever, right? Roles we take on. And in fact, now that I say it, I realize that I've talked about this in terms of roles and giving up the roles before, which is a good start. But it is just the start, because the real issue is kind of something like, what am I if what I am can't take on a role, right? Because what can take on a role? A human being, an individual self, And so it's this, again, back to what Rupert Spira was saying in that audio. It's this belief that I am somehow sitting behind these eyeballs, sitting within this meat suit. That colors my perspective. And it's just so funny because we've heard it all before, but it's just striking me differently now. It's like, just like the hammer claiming it's the carpenter, right? it's just such a severe limitation on the discovery. I mean, if I go, what am I? And I'm expecting wisdom to tell me what it means to be a human being. That doesn't get me very far. I know what it means to be a human being. That's been my perspective for 55, 57 years. I cut off a couple years there because I figure I wasn't contemplating that question my first couple years. So that's why for me it's helpful to ask the question if I'm not a human being. And of course, and I think Eshwar even poo-pooed that. but for me, it's helpful because it gets me out of that fundamental assumption. So the question I want to ask is, if I'm not a human being, then what am I? You know, and the reason to poo-poo that idea is, well, you know, I think the reality of it is, you know, you're that and more. But for right now, I need to set that aside temporarily to get behind it. Behind the idea. And I'll tell you what was helpful to me in this beginning shift in this fundamental assumption was, as you guys know, I started looking, well, wait a minute, what's the meaning of life? And as I was looking at that issue, one of the things that came up was the idea of simulation theory. And I don't know if you're familiar with simulation theory or not, but we saw it in the movie The Nines. If you've seen that movie, you have an instant idea of what I'm speaking of. But there are some out there, including Elon Musk, the Tesla guy, right? Who I have to say, although he wasn't the one who came up with the theory, but the theory is that we may just be living in a computer simulation, much like the Matrix as well. And the Matrix is a good way. Oh yeah. Yes, yes, yes. Simulation and simulacra appeared in the Matrix in Neo's apartment. Yeah, that's where he kept the software he was selling. Yeah, kept the disc. Yeah, but yeah, that's the point. Is we're living. So just posing the possibility, right? Well, what if you're really lying there in and who called it that? Oh, I was reading some Jed McKenna too. A glass coffin, right? You know, in the Matrix, how they have all those like glass, he called them glass coffins, but those things that people were laying in, being fed, and they thought they were out living in the world, you know, walking the streets, going to their job, eating noodles, I mean, whatever it was they were doing. They thought they were actually doing it when in fact, it was just their brains telling them they were doing that. And you know, whether or not simulation theory is correct, you know, I don't need to go there. What I need to go is, maybe, you know, there's a possibility here, a real possibility that what my brain is telling me is going on is not really what's going on. Yeah. So, you know, my brain wants to tell me it's the source, it's the originator. It's the mover and the shaker, right? It wants to tell me that, you know, it's like in the Matrix when, and I love the line, it comes flitting back into my head every now and then, Morpheus and Neo are fighting, doing that whole judo thing or whatever it was. And Neo's, and Morpheus says, do you think that's air you're breathing? It's like, whoa, right? Our fundamental assumptions could be fundamentally wrong. I mean, it's not just a movie. It's a clue. And so just to entertain it is to go, oh, all right. maybe this isn't what's going on. Maybe I'm not a human. Maybe I am laying in a glass coffin, as Jed McKenna called it, somewhere, and just dreaming that I'm, you know, sitting at this desk talking to y'all in Pueblo, Colorado. What's a Pueblo? What's Colorado? What's a desk? You know, I mean, it's like, let's challenge these, you know. What we are is stardust, right? Well, maybe. I don't even know that, right? But at least you get to begin to expand the possibilities. So I guess there's a part of my mind that because of this fundamental assumption that I'm a human being, has kind of continued to, despite my sincerest desire to know the truth and be the truth, it seems to me that there's a part of my mind has continued to see some of this as maybe a little bit of fantasy, right? What do you mean I'm not a human? I mean, it's not that I've confronted directly and come to that conclusion. It's running back here, you know? It's that program that says you're a human being living in a world of solid objects, interacting with other human beings, kind of discounts the truth that I've come across in whatever form. So I can't start from the false assumption and hope to have a greater understanding. Greater is not the word I want. A real understanding of the truth. Yeah, it's quiet. I'm just trying to figure out where to go. So the wobble is about sitting in that undefined realm, sitting in the possibility that maybe none of what I have ever believed is true. Including the belief that there's an I there to believe anything. And sitting that for a second, and it wobbles. It's like, whoa, let me hold on. Oh, I can't hold on. It's not real. Right? Where do I put my feet? So... this seems a little backwards, but this is what I'm feel prompted to do, and that is to read to you. And I read it last night, so if you heard it last night, I apologize for repeating myself. But to read to you, to read to you what I wrote in reference to my spiritual aspiration and my vision plan. And it's funny because this came in just in a strange way. Just in a strange way that I it's not important, I guess. But anyway, so here's what here's the spiritual aspiration. Live in open-hearted expectation. And after that, the word further. And the further word is from, again, I part of what I did this past week, and you know, it's like those people that talk about A Course in Miracles being dropped on their heads. I had the Jed McKenna spiritual enlightenment trilogy here. I like Jed McKenna. He's irreverent. I like that. And one pointed. And he's not fooling around, you know. But this word further is something that he talks about in the book. And frankly, he's getting it from Ken Kesey and the Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test, which I read in high school and loved, you know, further, right? That was their motto on the, what was the bus called? The Merry Pranksters. And I don't know what the name of the bus was yet, but that was the name of the bus. Oh my God. I just remembered, wasn't it, Shauna? Yeah. The name of the bus was further. You know, so let's break through these conventions and see where that takes us. And so breaking through the convention of thinking that I'm a human being, the word further is perfect. So again, the spiritual aspiration, live an open-hearted expectation further. And I just love that because the expectation isn't that I'll get something. That's not the kind of expectation I'm talking about, or Inner Wisdom's talking about, or whoever came up with this is talking about. Open-hearted is really the key here. It's the willingness to live in the potentiality. The absolute potentiality of period of what I don't know, because I don't know what anything is. I don't know who I am or even what I am. And therefore, I do not know how to orient myself to my experience. And that, the letting go of the need to have a orientation, that will take me further. So, let me get a drink. Oh, Don, I thought you were frozen. You were so still.
Yes, there's something that has shifted. I'm listening to you.
Amen. Good. Okay, so the spiritual aspiration, live in open-hearted expectation further. And then these are the sentences I wrote about it in terms of a vision plan, which was our assignment this past week. A vision plan that would, in fact, take us further. And it's funny here. It just occurs to me that it's funny to be writing about a vision plan because well, like, you know, and this comes from The Secret. Normally, if these vision plans are like, oh, I want to be married, I want 3 kids, I want a red convertible, and I want a house, and I'm going to cut pictures out of magazines, I'm going to put them all on this vision board. And then that's what I'm going to look at every morning until I get it, right? Something to that effect. So a vision plan actually sounds like the opposite direction of further. It sounds like, let's get this really concrete. We're going to make this really concrete so that we can achieve what we set out to achieve. You know, what we envision is what we want. So it's just interesting to be writing a vision plan, to go further into unknowingness, but that's what we're doing. So here it is, live an open-hearted expectation further. I look in each moment to discover what meaning I have applied. And I think that I think that contemplation of any of these sentences could fill up the rest of my days. I look in each moment to discover what meaning I have applied. Gosh, isn't this what the Course in Miracles has been talking to us about? This has the meaning that it's to hold tea, or something cold, or maybe something hot. And I've had it for, I don't know, 10 years, and I just found it at the top of the, I mean, meaning, right? And this is what Eshwar was talking to us about when he was talking about, just wash your hands and then say this is hand washing, not, oh, I'm going to go wash my hands, because, you know, we define it, and then we think that's what's happening. But what he was telling us was experience happens first, and then we define it. So, and that sounds really amorphous and hard to get your head around, which I think is, I think that's what all of these things do, right? It's like, well, what do you mean? I have given everything I see all the meaning it has for me. And it's all centered around me. But at any rate, this is a vision plan. I look in each moment to discover what meaning I have applied. I pause to appreciate what is actually happening in this moment, here and now. I pause to appreciate what is actually happening in this moment here and now. And, you know, as Eshwar talked about washing hands, I was reminded of that scene from Peaceful Warrior, where Dan, after having met with Socrates, Dan is in the shower and he's just watching the water hit his hand and run, you know, he's seeing all the droplets and it's just, you know, it's slowed down. It's slow motion. It's, you know, of course they have the ability to do that with the movie, but I think we have the same ability to do that. You know, Michael Langford told us, slow down, just slow down. Right. Okay. I took a shower. I'm done. Well, wait a minute. Why don't we have the experience of that? Right. Why don't we just do it? And be there in that moment. And it's not like you can't be in a moment, but it's we remove ourselves from the moment by projecting our thoughts to another moment, a past moment, a future moment. You know, how often do we wash our hands? Do we take a shower? And just take a shower, just wash our hands. And what spiritual teacher haven't we heard say that? You know, be in the moment, the power of now. Yeah, but I want to be enlightened. So I'm going to project myself into that moment. I pause to appreciate what is actually happening in this moment, here and now. I do not compare anything to anything else. I do not compare anything to anything else. Any comparison holds within it the false assumption that life is constructed of separate, static people and events. I could have added things there, I think. I recognize that what I am is not static.
Jeff Foster's website is called Life Without a Center.
It's a static center. It's this, and Eshwar said it in his in the satsang the other night. It's like continuity. It's this imagined continuity that creates the sense of self. You know, who I was yesterday, who I was when I was 10 years old, who I'll be when I'm enlightened. And you can see the comparison in that. Or who I am is compared to Shauna or Dawn or Jay. That's a reinforcement of who I think I am. I think I'm a human being. I think you're a human being. Let's let them go head to head and see who wins. You're right? I mean, it's a way of defining myself, the comparisons. And it's not just, you know, with people. It's the comparison of this moment as compared to that moment. Do I feel better now than I did 5 minutes ago? If I get this job, will I feel better than I feel now? That's the chopping up of life into discrete stuff that doesn't exist, these discrete sections, you know? You know, we talk about judgment creating the world. Well, that's what's being talked about. So we're not bad because we compare ourselves to others or we compare this moment to that one. It doesn't make us bad. It just makes us clueless. You know, if we think that that's what's going on. And we put ourselves into this trance. Into this mental trance where everything is dissected that way. And then we believe it. So I think this is going to be invaluable. I think this is invaluable. I do not compare anything to anything else. Any comparison holds within it the false assumption that life is constructed of separate, static people and events. I recognize that what I am is not static. I remember that the thoughts I hear do not come from my mind. I'll get it in a second. Shauna, yay! I think Shauna talked about this in her last program. When she talked about their week in the retreat last week. And we know this, and again, we pay homage to the idea that the thoughts do not come from my mind. But
for 50, however many years, I mean, however old you are, that's the way it seemed. So that's going to, that takes some repetition, some reminding. I remember that the thoughts I hear do not come from my mind, and so I easily dismiss them as unimportant and irrelevant. And I love the irrelevant thing, and that's exactly what Eshwar was telling us the other night. You know, the experience comes first, and then we slap the thoughts on. Well, what's that got to do with anything? It's irrelevant. It's irrelevant to the experience. Does life still go on without thought? The answer is yes. I remember that the thoughts I hear do not come from my mind, and so I easily dismiss them as unimportant and irrelevant. I joyously participate in each experience by removing my self-concept as the central focus of the experience. how do I do that? I don't know, but that's what I do. Right? It's a vision plan. I joyously participate in each experience by removing my self-concept as the central focus of the experience. I was talking to a friend the other day about a mutual friend, and we were parsing through what the mutual friend had said, and it occurred to us that what the mutual friend had said was, look at me, I know something about this, you know, and that's what we do. So if you say you're going to the store to buy an iron, I'll go, oh, let me tell you about irons. I mean, I went through 4 irons, none of them worked, and I finally got, you know, this Proctor Silex, and it worked, right? And what am I doing? I'm telling you what I know. I'm inserting myself into that experience. And again, it doesn't, you know, being a braggart or a know-it-all, or I mean, however you want to describe that phenomenon, we're all familiar with it. And we all do it, frankly, to a larger or lesser degree. Oh, I know what you mean. That happened to me once. Yeah. I mean, just tiny little, but we do it all the time. It's like, how can I relate to what's being said? That's what we're trying to do. We're trying to relate to what's being said. And what are we relating? This sense of self, you know, that I've been building all these years. Again, it doesn't make us bad. It just makes us clueless. It just, you know, it's the orientation. What has this experience got to do with me? The answer is nothing. And that's always the answer. Whether they're talking about operating on your foot or your friend's talking about going to buy an iron. The experience is the experience, even if it's your foot. And it's, you're like, you may be like, I don't know what you're like. I'm like, I guess, how do you even be in an experience? How do you even be there without inserting your, you know, relating to the experience? Good question. It is. But that's the question. How do I keep sticking Jacqueline in the middle of everything? That's the center. That's the life without a center that Jeff Foster's talking about.
And perhaps part of that answer, and I'm sure part of that answer is, I remember that the thoughts I hear do not come from my mind. And so I easily dismiss them as unimportant and irrelevant. Jacqueline's thoughts about this, Jacqueline's attempt to relate to this, is unimportant and irrelevant. And so I can dismiss the impulse to insert myself, to relate to the experience through Jacqueline. I can easily dismiss that. It's unimportant, it's irrelevant, and it impedes my seeing, my true seeing. That's just self-building all the time, all the time, all the time, all the time. Oh, banana bread? My mom used to make banana bread. Oh, I love banana bread. Who cares? But that's what the mind does all the time. It's unimportant. It's irrelevant. Can we engage in conversation while in awareness? Shauna writes. You wrote that, right, Shauna? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think people do it, but then I think you get, I think you get your Rupert Spires and you're going, what? What'd he say? or your Ramana Maharshis or your Nisargadatta Maharaj. So yeah, can it be done? Yeah. Is it something we're used to doing? No. And, you know, we've heard talk about using the brain as a tool. So, you know, Shauna can say, I'm going to the grocery. Do you need anything? I'll go in. I'll go, oh, yeah, I need milk and bread and eggs. I'm just trying to, something's popping in the brain about a Muji video. I'm trying to remember what he said. It was like there and gone again. But you know, fundamentally, life goes on. It's like when I told Eshwar, I am willing to accept that I don't exist. And he's like, wait, no. It's not that you don't exist. It's that you're not what you take yourself to be. So, yeah, and the idea of Muji is still there. So it seems like maybe it's a video I watched this morning, but I'm not sure. But, you know, we still go to the grocery. We still balance our checkbooks. We just don't think that there's a – and this I don't know from personal experience, so I'm speculating. What I understand the masters to be saying – is that we don't take that seriously. We don't take it seriously that that Jacqueline must balance her checkbook or that Jacqueline must go to the grocery. We just quit believing in that orienting factor. If we're hungry, we eat. If we gotta go potty, we go potty. But we'll be exploring this idea, this question, right? How does one operate if it's not all about me? And, you know, I remember my mother saying that to me. Well, you just think the world revolves around you, don't you? And I'm like, yeah. And the truth is, don't we all? And to be willing to give up the
assumption that the world revolves around me is to live in that wobble. As Don said last night, welcome to the wobble. That actually reminded me of that scene in The Matrix where Morpheus says to Neo, welcome to the desert of the, and what was it, the desert of the real or the desert of the unreal? Does anybody know? Where'd Jay go? Well, he would know. But, you know, it's like, this is, maybe it was the real because it was, he was like showing him, this is what really exists. You know, welcome to this. And it's like, and Neo, that's when Neo freaks out in the movie and goes, I want out of here. But that's how it feels. It's like, you mean every single assumption I have ever made about what life is and what I am is wrong? Yes, that's what I mean. Wow. And that's the final sentence of this vision plan. I welcome and rest in the wobble because this is where my truth is made welcome. Welcome to the wobble. That's great. Amen. Welcome to the wobble. I mean, frankly, in many ways, it's more comforting than pretending to know when you don't. And that's what the ego is, pretending to know when you don't. Well, let me tell you what you are. And that's why when somebody challenges us, we get so shaken. We react with such vehemence. And frankly, that's what's becoming apparent to me is that's the whole basis of the I am bad thought. And, you know, it's interesting that all of this has come about because I, cause and effect, but it seems as if this has come about because I expressed a sincere desire to be rid of the I am bad thought, which I am sick and tired of lugging around all these years. So the revelation, and I wrote about it in yesterday's tip, is you don't get rid of the I am bad thought without getting rid of the I am Jacqueline thought. I am the body, mind, personality thought. The I am bad thought is merely a means of maintaining that thought. I'm a body, mind, personality named Jacqueline. And sometimes sometimes I knock it out of the park. And other times, boy, do I fall far short. This has been weird. This is not how I thought this would go. Yay! So I'm going to read to you a little bit about, where this started with this I am bad belief. So let's see, this would have been, well, this was on May the 4th. I said, Father, I see that I still believe the I am bad thought, though I sincerely want to let this belief go. What would you have me see in me that I'm not seeing? What would you share with me today? The response, let's start with, you are not bad. No matter what you be, you be. And as Regina has said, that is all you can ever do. I may have read this to you guys before. I apologize if I have. Nothing more is required. You need not prove yourself or earn your worth. What is needed only to alleviate your own suffering. Which reminds me of what Kathy read on Sunday. It's like the universe is like, I don't care whether you think you're bad. I don't care whether you think you're good. I don't care what you think. Right? So you can alleviate the I am bad thought or not, but you're just alleviating your own suffering. So you can take that trip or not. You need not prove yourself or earn your worth. What is needed only to alleviate your own suffering. You are free to do and believe as you wish. Your motivation for releasing the I am bad belief is simply to stop your self-imposed suffering. I'm like, yeah, y'all, I don't care why I want to do it. I just want to do it. I said, yes, but how? If I'm aware of the belief and know that I need not believe it, how do I let it go? And the response, give me your opinions. Do not seek to measure. Do the next thing and let that thing be. You are aware that your evaluations of yourself and others is artificial, superficial, and wrong. Why do you keep evaluating? When you see an evaluation, say, I see you. Do not repress your evaluation. Merely acknowledge its presence and ask me to evaluate for you. And it seems to me, if I'm surrender and I hear the surrender swirling around behind everything that I've been talking about. But if I surrender, I mean, what's the evaluation going to be? Oh, that's yourself. You're judging yourself. Cut it out. I mean, you know, ask me to evaluate for you. There's nothing wrong here. There's only one thing going on here. You know, cut it out. Do not repress your evaluation. Merely acknowledge its presence and ask me to evaluate for you. Close your eyes. Take the time to slow down so you can see the exact process as it occurs. Your evaluations are made so quickly that you do not, in fact, see most of them. As your desire to see them grows, so too will your ability. You must cross the threshold from desiring positive evaluations only to desiring none. As we have said, none of them are true. If feedback is received, recognize that it need not be experienced as an evaluation. And yeah, and some of this is about, you know, getting up in the morning to say, oh, what did Regina say about my tip, right? And being up with the good comments and down with the bad comments, you know? This seems, by the way, a very long time ago right now, reading this. You must cross the threshold from desiring positive evaluations only to desiring none. As we have said, none of them are true. If feedback is received, yeah, so what if I say, okay, I don't care what the evaluation is. So what do I do with it when I get it? When somebody goes, oh, good job, or oh, bad job, what do I do with that then? If feedback is received, recognize it need not. Okay, let me turn that off. Recognize that it need not be experienced as an evaluation. You cannot do good or bad, please or displease, succeed or fail. And, you know, this really goes to the heart of the matter, right? Who can do good? Who can do bad? Who can please, fail, succeed? What? who, I mean, again, it's buying into that, here's this person. Is she doing a good job? Look at her move around. You know, it's like, and taking that perspective as who I am. It's meaningless and irrelevant. The only question is, what is the next thing? What would you have me do now? You cannot continue to follow the dictates of the thinking mind. The thinking mind guides based on the evaluations you would make. You cannot continue to follow the dictates of the thinking mind. The thinking mind guides based on the evaluations you would make. What we talked about, the value, you know, that's the judgment. That's the comparing one thing to another. That's the thing that keeps the world turning. The thinking mind guides based on the evaluations you would make. I do not lead according to some estimation of your worth. I know your worth. In order for you to know it as well, you must let go of evaluating your own performance. Yeah, Kathy, we wobble. Kathy says, less than, more than, bigger than, better than, worse than, ad nauseum. That's right. That's right. Where do I fit into this? Oh, here, I'm, oh, no, wait, I'm over here. I'm, you know, but it's always defining this. This thing we would use as a center. I do not lead according to some estimation of your worth. I know your worth. In order for you to know it as well, you must let go of evaluating your own performance. Do what you feel led to do. Listen to this line. True value is uncovered, not created. Uncover your value by listening only to my estimation of your worth. Let's be clear. My evaluation of your worth can never change. Your worthiness is built into what you are. True value is uncovered, not created. My estimation of what I think I am and how I think I'm doing at it, at being what I think I am, is the cover. It's what I would create that covers my true value. Your worthiness is built into what you are. Ask me how to see and what to do. If you always ask, you can never be mistaken. Ask, ask, ask. I promise to answer you truly. If tempted to see your actions as good or bad, understand that those evaluations mean nothing. The immediate question is, have you done as I have asked? By surrendering your will, you can be assured that the evaluation of the results are meaningless. Let me read that sentence again. By surrendering your will, you can be assured that the evaluation of the results are meaningless. There, you know. And again, it's like we were talking about a while ago, you end up with conversations like Nisargadatta Maharaj and Ramana, and you know, it's like, what's being said here? But it's the same thing. It's irrelevant, unimportant, irrelevant, meaningless. You know, it's like asking, did you dream good last night? You know, how did the characters in your dream act last night? Did they do what they were supposed to do? It's meaningless. By surrendering your will, you can be assured that the evaluation of the results are meaningless. How could the small self know what is in the best interest of the one? Here's a humdinger. You are not able to judge the value of your actions because your actions have no value.
Whoa, what? Wait, what? What did you say?
That's not what I want to hear, right? That's not what Jacqueline wants to hear. No value, no matter how good I do it, no matter how much beauty and help I bring to the world. That's right.
All that stuff.
No meaning. No value. You are not able to judge the value of your actions because your actions have no value. Only recognition of your true nature can show you the value that you are. Everything else means nothing. Be that which you are. Nothing more is required. Blessings to you. Amen. And I'm going to read you the next days. The next time I journal, although I do think I've read it before, but looking back, I think it looks differently. I said, I cried when I read these words a little while ago. There is no world. What does this mean? What would you have me see in this or in me that I am not seeing? And the response, it means simply that you are not who you think you are. Continuing to believe that you are the tiny character called Jacqueline is impeding your progress on the journey with me. When I ask you to lay down your belief in the character, I realize that this will seem difficult to do. However, you must walk through your beliefs like you would walk through a wall of illusory fire, like you would walk through a funhouse on Halloween. When I tell you that you do not know what to expect, do your best to believe that statement. Your evaluations of the world you live in are just like your evaluations of yourself. I tell you there is no world. You must begin to act as if this is true. Yes, a la Indiana Jones. We talked about that last time. I tell you there is no world. You must begin to act as if this is true. You still rely heavily upon cause and effect relationships, though I tell you there is but one cause. You, in truth, and one effect, the world and all it contains. You must let go the belief that you are at the mercy of the world's rules and laws. I must let go of the belief that I'm walking down Fifth Avenue when I'm actually laying in a glass coffin in the Matrix. You must let go of the belief that you are at the mercy of the world's rules and laws. Expect only good and you will see only good. This does not mean all outcomes will be in the character's favor. Rather, know that all you see and hear and feel is perfect as it is the perfect expression of the creative process that you are. Throwing them in the trash. It's all right. They're all on the computer. Okay. So I'm still not getting it here. I mean, I feel like I'm getting it here. I'm still not getting it in the journal. This is when I start screaming. I think. Anyway, I say, I see my belief in unworthiness is up for healing. When I awoke this morning, I could barely stand to be with myself. I felt guilt and unworthiness around everything. Regina had asked me to be her reader, and I was so nervous both before and during the reading, I could barely squeak out the words on the page. I felt guilty for watching the Netflix Ted Bundy movie last night and staying up too late. It's a good movie. But I feel guilty about it, right? I feel just a general guilt feeling and a self-loathing beyond conscious comprehension. I have been hearing very clearly from ego that I should just quit all this silly stuff and go back to Louisville. I am unable to commit to sitting down for very long periods of time with either my work or inner contemplation. I heard myself say, "That's it. I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore." Father, what would you share with me today? The response, "You are not unworthy." Well, thanks a lot. That's what it says. And then this word came into my head, screed. What? So I looked it up. I don't know the significance. Is there something I am to see here? So the definition of screed, a long speech or piece of writing, typically one regarded as tedious. That's the first definition. The second one is a leveled layer of material, for example, cement, applied to a floor or other surface. Just bizarre. This word was just there in the mind. So, in contemplation of the word screed, I see that this long and tedious discourse is the one I have listened to my entire life that tells me I have no worth. Tedious indeed. I am so ready to give this up that I am ready to give up my life in order to be rid of it. Wow, that is revealing. That's what it says here. And it is. Oh. Yeah, anyway. What would you add to your message to me today in regard to this realization? And the response, your willingness to be done with the belief in unworthiness is the impetus for the revulsion you feel. Just be aware that the revulsion you feel is not indicative of the truth of your beliefs about yourself. It is merely indication that you are willing to let this come up to be healed. When you are repulsed, look at the thought and say, "I don't believe you. I see I but do this to myself, and it is a thing I am willing to do no longer. My revulsion for myself is reflected in the world. Not only do I suffer, but we all suffer as a result of it. I am no longer willing to feed this killing thought into the world. I am here to let only life bloom in me. I do this by releasing this denial of the denial of truth. We are blessed indeed. Amen." And then I said, "I do not know what anything is for. I do feel extreme discomfort." And the question came, "Why do you feel unworthy?" And this is really where I started screaming. "I have no idea. I can see that I believe it. I can see that I think everyone else has inherent value, but that I am just pretending to. I am afraid the gig is up. It is coming time to prove my worth, of which I have long boasted, and I have nothing valuable to give. I feel extreme fear. I just want to be left alone. I don't want to see or talk to anyone. I just want to be released." And I said, "I will listen to Regina's talk again. I listened intently this morning, but I can tell there is more there." Which I don't think I did, by the way. Let me go on. "Father, I do not know what to ask. I have forgotten the question. I am willing to hear your guidance." And the response, Let go. Your need to control is based upon your true, in air quotes, your need to control is based upon your true, meaning strongly held to, belief that your unworthiness mandates that things be just so, not just as they are. Okay, let's read that again without some of the quotes and stuff, air quotes and stuff. Your need to control is based upon your belief that your unworthiness mandates that things be just so, not just as they are. There is value in the movie you watched. Look at the theme of guilt. Spoiler alert, if you're going to watch this movie on Netflix and don't want to know about this, you have, need to put your fingers in your ear. So anyway, so it turns out his Ted Bundy's girlfriend's the one who originally called the cops and said, this may be the guy you're looking for. And she carried that with her all these years. And so the question is, look at the theme of guilt. Was she guilty for turning Ted in? Of course not. Her actions did not cause the pain and suffering of his victims. You seem to believe that your acknowledgement of the darkness within you proves that the darkness is what is true about you. You must look at this darkness directly. You must look this darkness directly in the eye and tell it you don't believe it. Tell it you are trading the evaluation of the imposter self for my evaluation of you. Tell it this is not pretense. What you would have me believe is the pretense. Tell it you are no longer willing to be mesmerized by its whisperings, its screams, or its directives. Come rest with me in the assuredness of your eternal value. It is by resting there that you recognize it and can claim it as ours. It is by resting there. So let me, these two sentences. Ouch. Come rest with me in the assuredness of your eternal value.
Call from 719543439.
It's the same number as a minute ago. Somebody desperately wants to get in touch with me. I guess they can wait 7 minutes.
Call from 719543439.
Come rest with me in the assuredness of your eternal value. It is by resting there that you recognize it and can claim it as ours. This is the... this is the resting in the wobble. Right? And that's not how it's phrased here, but I don't know my eternal worth. I don't know my eternal value. So I have to rest in that, okay, maybe I'm not that stuff I've been believing myself to be for all these years, you know, but I don't know what I am. Tell me what I am. Come rest with me in the assuredness of your eternal value. It is by resting there that you recognize it and can claim it as ours. There has been no great mistake. You are asked to do what is consistent with your value and your function. No one is believing the pretense that you are not worthy other than yourself. It is not true. Let yourself see it and not believe it. I love you. I hold you in my arms, and we together bless the world we see. I think we got 5 minutes here. Maybe I'll just finish this up. All right. So this is what I'm playing around with my spiritual aspiration. I said, good morning, Father. In contemplating my spiritual aspiration this morning, I heard, remember the truth in every moment. This seemed to come from the heart and not the mind. I trust this is my true spiritual aspiration, but if it is not, please help me to become aware of my error now. Response, you are experiencing difficulty operating at this moment in time. There is indeed a healing bubbling within you. Your willingness is indeed high. This aspiration is helpful because it can guide you from the habit of attempting to feel better back to what is most helpful, your healing. Remembering the truth in each moment gives you the ability to refocus from the goals of accomplishing tasks, promoting self-image, gaining ease and control over life. In other words, the goals or idols that you set before your spiritual aspiration. Its simplicity as a redirective device is also helpful. It is a reminder to focus on the here and now and to let go imaginative solutions to the problems of the day. Thank you, Father. What else would you share with me today? Know what you want rather than merely feeling good. You know you want to be healed from the I am bad belief. Be vigilant in seeing the I am bad thoughts within your mind. You are telling yourself that this belief is true in this very moment, are you not? The house is a mess. You have a million things to do. You're not sure if the talk for the presenter series is up to par. You are failing as a gardener. You're wasting money and on and on and on. Don't miss these opportunities for healing. Don't let these thoughts fly under the radar. Can you also see that the need to fix these thinking habits forms part of the I am bad belief? Can you also see that the need to fix these thinking habits forms part of the I am bad belief itself? And that's what we were talking about a while ago, right? It simply keeps you focused on the I am a body, mind, personality belief, the I am bad belief. Next, it says here next, what if there were nothing wrong with you? What if nothing about you needed to be fixed? What if nothing needed to be done by you? Who are you now? What is your heart's true desire? What is it you long for? I said, the answer to that question seems elusive. Its elusivity scares me. I feel like I am supposed to have an answer. Without an answer, my life has no meaning and I have no value. And the response, at last we are getting somewhere. Rest here and contemplate these questions. And I did. I think I'm out of time. Am I not out of time, Dawn? Yes. No, I just mean, is that the end? Is this when I'm supposed to stop?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It's 4.
All right.
Clock your time.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you, guys. Thanks for letting me share. I love you all greatly. Very, very grateful. Thanks. Bye.